Coming up, talking NBA Summer League, best fits for some of the remaining free agents, and a whole lot else with Tom Haverstraw. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. Joining me today to discuss NBA Summer League and NBA free agency, Tom Haverstraw. Tom, how are you doing?
Doing great, man. Summer League is here. Let's go.
I know, dude. It's here. I'm looking forward to flying out to Vegas later this week. Always enjoy seeing all 30 teams, everybody in NBA media. It's always cool going there every single year. It's kind of like a big party to end the year, just seeing all your friends that you always just see their little avatars on screen the whole year. And then you meet people who listen to the pod and all that. It's always very fun. So I look forward to it. Let's talk about a trade that just happened, though, first, Tom. The Clippers, the Jazz, and the Heat made a three-way deal. Norm Powell going to Miami, John Collins going to the Clippers, and then Kevin Love, Kyle Anderson, and a 2027 Clippers second-round draft pick is going to the Utah Jazz. I want to start out with the Clippers side of this here, Tom, because I'm most fascinated from their perspective. Norm Powell was a borderline all-star last year. He might have been the replacement if LeBron James had dipped out earlier than he ended up doing on the day of the all-star game. Norm Powell could have been the replacement. He's a borderline sixth man of the year guy last year. He had a great season, the best season of his entire career, in his 30s at this point. And they flip him for John Collins. Now, John Collins is an elite lob threat. He's going to fit with James Harden. He adds front court flexibility. You can play with two bigs with Zubats. You got Brook Lopez now off the bench. You drafted Yannick Kona-Niedenhauser as well, a rookie lob threat big. So I like what they're doing here. And I think it opens up space for them to get Bradley Beal if he is indeed bought out. But what are your thoughts on what the Clippers are angling for here? Do you think this is the right approach, or are you baffled like some people are by their decision to get rid of Powell?
Yeah, Powell, getting rid of him, a 21-point scorer on extreme efficiency, that seems like a move that you do only if you're worried about giving him long-term money. At his age, approaching his mid-30s, you might not be excited about extending him, you know, an additional 2 years or 3 years down the line. And to me, what this means, KOC, is the move before the move, that Bradley Beal steps in as the replacement for Norm Powell, as this kind of like supercharged hyper scorer next to James Harden and Kawhi Leonard. That seems like, to me, what this deal portends, because you don't make this deal with just James Harden as your starting point guard and shooting guard, and they don't really have much backcourt depth besides Chris Dunn, who's not a pure ball handler scorer. He's the opposite of that. And so maybe they do this deal with some sort of indication that Phoenix is going to agree to a buyout, and then you can get Bradley Beal on a really nice deal without extending past that 2027 year. And that, to me, is low-key the biggest storyline in the NBA right now, is that the Clippers are not willing to go past 2027 in any sort of salary. They have $29 million on the books, according to SpotTrack.com, which is basically the Zubats contract. After that, there really is anyone on this roster long-term. Kawhi's up then, James Harden's up then. Kawhi Leonard's up a year earlier. But this is kind of this arms race that's building across the league for gearing up for the summer of 2027. The Warriors have no money beyond 2027, and the Lakers have no money beyond 2027. Luka Doncic, of course, an extension expected to happen. But if you look at what's happening, Giannis and Jokic can be free agents in the summer of 2027. So you wonder if the Warriors, the Lakers, and the Clippers are all just kind of preparing for an all-out war in 2027, or they're just trying to keep their cap sheets clean going forward. What say you?
I do think that's an element of it. We continue hearing that about the Lakers as well, that they want a clean sheet for 2027. And, you know, all indications would be that that's either Giannis or Jokic, as you're saying. And even if it's not, I mean, Karl Anthony Towns can be a free agent that offseason as well. He has a player option. Anthony Davis can be. I know these guys would be getting older at that point. AD would be 34. Towns would be 30, almost 32. Like, these guys are getting older. Rudy Gobert would be 35 at that point. Jalen Green would be a free agent as well with a player option that year. But so, like, my point being is that it's these massive names that you're talking about, the best players in the world, Giannis and Jokic, But then there's a lot of other guys too in 2027. There's these like plan Bs, plan Cs that you can get pretty excited about that summer. So I think that's what teams are angling for here. And for the Clippers and for any other team that's trying to load up for 2027, it makes some sense because with Norm Powell, from the Clippers standpoint especially, you don't want to compromise that chance with Norm Powell, especially when you might feel like John Collins and potentially getting Bradley Beal, the opportunity to look attractive to Bradley Beal outweighs the possibility of just giving Norm Powell whatever contract that he's going to end up wanting. Because as much as I really like Norm Powell, he is a defensive liability. He does have his limitations as a playmaker. He did not perform well in the playoffs this year compared to his regular season production. So you have plenty of reasons to look at and say, he's a great regular season player, but maybe not worth the 25, 30, however much million dollars he's going to want, especially if it's going to compromise your chances of landing a big fish in 2027. So I like it from a long-term standpoint from the Clippers, and I also like it from a short-term standpoint too, obviously, especially if they get Bradley Beal. But even if they don't, I just think having front court flexibility is so important in the NBA today. Different playoff series require different types of lineups, and the fact John Collins can be a spacer for you or a lob guy with James Harden in pick and rolls, like Harden and Collins could be beautiful basketball together, mm-hmm. high pick and roll. The fact you can play with two bigs or one big, you can play with a massive drop coverage big like Zubats or Brook Lopez, or have a bit more of the versatile guy like John Collins. Not that he's a great defender by any means, don't get me wrong, but it's a different style than Zubats and Lopez. I just feel like the Clippers are starting to look like a team that can have different identities, whereas last year, when Zubats was off the floor, it was Ben freaking Simmons as the backup. Like seriously, Tom. And now we're talking about all these guys behind him. They can just, like, to me, like, the front court is what defines your defensive style. And now suddenly the Clippers can take on so many different shapes. And so if they're this and they end up getting Bradley Beal after a buyout, look, I know every year we start believing in the Clippers, but this would be a fun team of rejects and guys that get hurt all the time. It's like, maybe this is the one year that they end up all staying healthy.
Yeah, I can't put them on the top tier of the Western Conference. I mean, Houston, OKC, Denver may be in there depending on how things shake out the rest of the offseason for them. I really like the Cam Johnson move. But when you look at the Clippers, I really bought into them last year, and I kept telling myself, this is going to be the year. This is going to be the year they break through, because Norm Powell, he's a 50-40-90 guy. He's breaking through for them, and it's weird to have an age 32 guy having his breakout season. And Kawhi was looking awesome. Slim Kawhi was looking so good, and Zubats, didn't happen. And so does Brad Beal and John Collins move the needle enough that you could put them in that top tier? I say no. I don't think they're there, and I don't think they expect to be there with this potential move. John Collins, it's like you saw what Obi Toppin did with the Indiana Pacers as this kind of like change of speed and athleticism for the Pacers, that you had Miles Turner, but you also got this guy coming off the bench as a potential small ball five that runs the floor and just plays with this vertical spacing and ability to just kind of shoot and dive at the rim, offensive rebounds. That's kind of what you're getting in John Collins. You're not going to get a defensive player of the year candidate or a rim protector in that sense, but for the long season, you need as many of those bigs as you can to offer those different looks, like you said. So I do like the pickup for them. And they sold high on Norm Powell, and they got John Collins, which is going to help them. But it is kind of interesting on the Miami Heat side. You know, they are getting their volume shooter that they lost in Duncan Robinson. This team really needs three-point spacing, especially with Bam Adebayo not really taking that leap as a stretch five. Tyler Hero can't be the only spacer on the team. And so now you get a very nice pickup for a guy that's going to play hard, get downhill. And I think the Miami Heat are going to see a big boost from getting Norm Powell in ways that you just can't do the same things with Duncan Robinson.
I agree with you. I mean, look, Heat fans might be surprised when I say this. The Heat are the big winners of the deal. They get Norm Powell for scraps. Mm-hmm. Like, let's just be honest. Like, that's what they get Norm Powell for. So you're getting a guy who is, a six-man of the year candidate, arguably an all-star last year, 21 points per game. As you said, Tom, a 40% shooter from three. He's like, Norman Powell's a great scorer. And you're getting that guy for scraps. Kevin Love is old. He's better at posting on Instagram at this point. Kyle Anderson, he's just a role player.
Yeah.
So for Miami, they get this guy. I agree with every word you said. But like, what is this team exactly, though, Tom? Like, you have Tyler Hero. You have Norm Powell. You drafted Kasparis Jakachonis with the 20th pick. None of these guys are true facilitators, creators. I wonder with Miami, what is the vision for this half-court offense? Do they want to have more traditional point? Or is this going to be a team where it's like everybody's sharing the ball, everybody's moving without the ball, everybody's playing with speed and tempo? Because if that's the direction they're kind of leaning towards, if that's what Spoelstra wants to install, I think this could be interesting. It could be fun. I still think there's a little bit too much overlap, though, with Hero, Powell, and Jakachonis. But, you know, I feel like when we're looking at some of these teams, not everything has taken full shape yet. Andrew Wiggins is still involved in trade talks right now. The Clippers still haven't filled, you know, that position with a buyout, a Bradley Beal buyout at this point. The Jazz, everybody's talking about them like, oh, what are they doing? They've getting nothing back for Colin Sexton and for John Collins. What's going on? The Angels have lost it. It's like, well, let's wait a minute. Let's wait on this. Like, we can't assess the full picture yet when they have created a lot of cap space, a lot of cap flexibility. There's a ton of restricted free agents still out there right now. I'm not ready to assess exactly what some of these teams are thinking until we see what the next move is. Will Andrew Wiggins get traded? Will the Clippers actually get Bradley Beal? Will the Jazz do something with their cap space, absorbing a player in the trade or making a contract offer sheet to a guy that's still out there? Like Kuminga is still a restricted free agent. Josh Giddey is still a free agent at this point. Cam Thomas, Quentin Grimes. Those are some good quality players still out there that are unsigned restricted free agents. And so until some of these dominoes end up falling, I've got a hard time saying the Jazz are nuts. Like, they held on to these guys for too long. Let's hold our horses here. Let's see what the next move is. Do you agree with me here, Tom, in particular with the Utah Jazz side of things here?
Yeah, well, also Larry Markkanen. I mean, this guy that, yes, for them, it was an all-star, starting the all-star game a couple years ago and fell out of that kind of like star status the last year. So he's 28 years old. He does not fit on the timeline that we see with the Utah Jazz, and they could flip
him. You think
he's
next?
I think he's next. I think Larry Markkanen's next. I think given the fact that they have broken this down to the studs, and you look at this team, was a 17-win team with Colin Sexton, with John Collins, they had, and Jordan Clarkson, these three vets that for the last like 3 years, we've been hearing them in trade talks or in the rumor mill of like, can they get a first round pick? Can they get like a bunch of seconds for these guys? And they ultimately traded them for nothing. They offloaded them for free, basically, and saying like, we are fully in the rebuild, bottoming out, and we're not going to have this weird kind of, we have a bunch of veterans and this young crew that we're trying to build for the future. And so I think Utah Jazz, the big win to me is that they picked a direction. Right? Like, Markkanen is kind of caught in the middle here, and I suspect we'll hear some more Markkanen talk this summer as Summer League and all the executives come and convene, that you're going to see Larry Markkanen as the next kind of the big domino that could fall because of the fact that this team right now with Isaiah Collier, Ace Bailey, Kyle Filipowski, Cody Williams, these guys who are super young and green, and then you got Markkanen. It doesn't really make much sense from an organizational standpoint. And you heard Austin Ainge say, we're not tanking. You're hearing that a month ago or so.
They're just going to suck organically. That's what they're going to do.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to bottom out, whether it's via tanking or not. They're going to be a bottom feeder in the NBA. So
it's so funny.
It's like you're, I guess the tanking part is that you're not going to have starter caliber veterans basically playing 20 minutes in a game and throwing in the towel a la Anthony Davis with the New Orleans Pelicans a few years ago. Like, I don't think that's the situation anymore, but I think it's a big win for Utah that they bring back Will Hardy on an extension. They have Austin Ainge, and you're going forward with the expectation that this is going to be a rebuild purely for the next 5 years. And it's not going to be, I guess if we're one move away, we got Markkanen and we got a couple other vets on the team, we can make a run for the play-in. Now they are fully in this rebuild. And I suspect teams like San Antonio or other contenders to check in on Markkanen, because that could be a very valuable swing piece for a contender.
For sure. And I think this is why, like, with today's podcast ahead of Summer League, I didn't want to do like a full, you know, off seasons, winners and losers type of thing. Like, I think, you know, usually around this time of year, there's a lot more settled, but there's so many restricted guys out there. We still have the LeBron situation. We still don't know exactly what Giannis is going to choose to do. We still don't have full clarity on Lauri Markkanen, among other things still out there. A lot of veterans still out there as well. But in regards to Utah, they do have clarity. As you said, Tom, they have chosen a direction and they have chosen a youth movement, and Markkanen does go against that with what they've built out. And I think this also speaks to why they chose Ace Bailey with the fifth pick. Obviously, mm-hmm. they thought highly of him, but I think this is a front office led by Austin Ainge and Danny Ainge. Ainge and the team owner, Ryan Smith, have a very close relationship. They're golf buddies. They have known each other for many years. They get along great. This front office has stability. If Ace Bailey turns out to be a bust, it's okay, right? Like, I think other teams, if Ace Bailey's a bust, you might be on the hot seat. With this situation, I think there was an understanding. We're a young team. Let's take a huge swing on this 6'7 shot maker who showed improvement last year at Rutgers and it could turn out to be something. And, you know, he had one really bad summer league game. And then on Monday night against Memphis, I thought he was a lot more impressive. He looks very good. Yeah. I mean, he had I think it was one in the first half and one in the second half where he had like two rebounds over two guys where he just used his athleticism just to snatch the ball and put it back up for the dunk. And he had two of them, I think, second and third quarter. And with Ace Bailey, man, like, I think with Utah, I said it at the time of the draft, he might not want to go there. But I think Utah is the type of situation that could end up a blessing in disguise for him, because he's going to get opportunities to shoot it. He's going to get opportunities to grow through mistakes, and he's under a really good coach in Will Hardy with a bunch of really good young players around him to grow with and alongside him. And so I'm excited for Ace Bailey in that situation, especially if they continue down this youth movement path and eventually trade Lauri Markkanen and Tom. But what have you think? What have you thought about Ace Bailey so far in summer league, and also with Markkanen? And I am curious, because I haven't thought about Markkanen and trades in a bit. Who's a team that you think should be going for Lauri Markkanen at this point of the summer right now?
Oh yeah, it's San Antonio. I love San Antonio, what they've done this offseason, but you get a wing shooter. I call him Super Klay Thompson, just supersized Klay Thompson. He's not the defender that Klay Thompson is, but in terms of just pure shooter and dynamic closeout attacker, Lauri Markkanen is the real deal. He's big. And if you have a Luke Kornet, Victor Wembanyama and Lauri Markkanen front line, good luck. Like,
did you see that Luke Kornet quote? He chose number 7 because he wants to be at least a third of Tim Duncan.
He's my favorite player right now. Like,
he's,
are you
such
kidding
a goofball.
Me?
I love
what
it.
What a line! What a line! You're speaking it's to my funny. Soul right there.
I think Celtics fans loved Kornet from that comment. I think some Spurs fans were rubbed the wrong way. That's because they haven't gotten to know Kornet yet. He's a big goofball. Yeah. He's hilarious. Like, Spurs fans, no offense intended towards Tim Duncan. Kornet's just, that's who he is. He's just a funny guy.
But do we ever get guys who are that humble in the NBA to say, I just hope to be a third of that player? You know? Like, we never hear that. A guy who's that self-aware to understand, like, I'm happy to be here, but also I understand my value in the league. And if I could be a third of that Hall of Famer or top 10 player all the time, I'll be okay. So that was great. And, you know, with the Utah Jazz, let's look at what they're doing here. Like, Kev, they are taking big swings in the draft on highly recruited players out of high school rather than going, okay, we're going to get ready-made 21-year-olds, 22-year-olds to help us right now. They're going for projects that might have been at a down year in college. Kyle Filipowski, top 5 pick out of the 22 class. Isaiah Collier, the number 1 player in that 23 class in that year, and then went to USC and had a real tough slide from where he was at. And then you got Ace Bailey, who's 18 years old still, number 2 pick. And so they're taking big swings on talent, right? And then the upshot is AJ DeBonce, a BYU player, coming down the pike next year. So you're kind of having your cake and eat it too, that you can get these super talented top five prospects coming into your system where they slid at Duke. Like Filipowski did not come out as a top five pick out of Duke. He fell. And then you got Isaiah Collier, who looks awesome on Monday night with Ace Bailey. Like the chemistry that they have running the floor and throwing alley-oops and finding each other. You could see the vision, right? And not the Nico Harrison vision with the draft lottery. You could see the vision with Isaiah Collier and that the athlete in Ace Bailey just running up and down the floor. Ace Bailey, like the skills that we saw on Monday night, like forget the stat line, which was nice. The one-handed passing, which is one of the most underrated skills in the NBA, is the ability to get off a good pass, sharp pass, when it looks like you're keeping your dribble. That's going to help him so much, these one-handed passes. Also, the no-dip on the chip three-point corner, corner three, was insane. Like if you got a guy who's that tall, who's able to get that 3-point shot off that quickly, it's going to unlock so much for that offense. And just the ability to catch that pass from Isaiah Collier from across the floor and just keep it high. Jeremy Grant does this a great job of this with the Blazers. There's so many things that Ace Bailey did in that game where I was like, I see the T-Mac comparisons, the athleticism, the pure skill from the footwork and the size, like that rebound putback, mid-range step back jumper that he had. Like some of these things that he was doing, I was like, yo, like not that he didn't show this at Rutgers, but the confidence and the athleticism and the reminder, this dude is 18 still, Kev. Yeah. I was in love with his game on Monday night.
I remember a long time ago, a very, very highly respected general manager said to me, he's like, he doesn't make you go wow in regards to some prospect that was out there like 8 years ago. He's like, he doesn't make me go wow. And he's like, he says, I look for players that make me go wow. And Ace Bailey is the type of prospect that makes you go, whoa,
yeah,
wow, yeah. Right? And it's like a very simple thing. Right? Like, it's very simple. Like, wow. Like, does he make you go, wow? But it's like, so you can think about all these analytics and all these numbers and watch all the film you want. But the players that do things, a no-dip three, as you mentioned, some of these passes off the dribble where it's just so seamless. And you're like, that was on the money. Mm-hmm. Little things that make you go, wow. Those are the players a lot of the time that end up panning out.
Yeah.
It's just the reality of it. And so that comment has always stuck in my mind all these years when it comes to draft prospects. And nothing's an exact science with the NBA draft. But it's just something that's always stuck in my mind. Because that GM I've always respected. And they've had plenty of hits.
He's got the wow factor. He's got the wow factor. Like so many of those plays. And look, it's G League. It's opening couple days of G League. Well, I mean, not G League, Summer League.
Summer League. It's basically, it's like a lot of G League-esque prospects.
Exactly. And so I don't want to get ahead of myself, but a lot of his dunks, like that's probably the fifth thing that jumped out to me was the thunderous dunks, like the aggressive work on the boards.
The fifth thing. Yes.
Yeah. And that was the thing I was always looking at as like the prospect was like, oh, he's like an incredible athlete. And yes, he was showing the athleticism, but we have to remember that a lot of times in the NBA, like applied athleticism is way better than raw athleticism.
Yes.
He's using his applied athleticism to score. So quick second jumps, that step back mid-range jumper off a putback was insane. The footwork to go back to that was like, how many players can A, get that shot off and B, have that processing power to leverage your athleticism to get this shot off? I just was super impressed by Ace Bailey. And like, I've done like a 360. I was on here wondering if he was a first round pick 2 weeks ago. And now I'm like, oh, absolutely worth a top five pick.
And we'll be right back after this break. Tom, let's talk about NBA free agents here because there's still some good ones left. So I want to go through some of the top remaining unrestricted free agents and then hit on some of the restricted free agents and play like player team. What's our best fit? What's the best fit for these guys? So with Bradley Beal, he's not quite bought out yet officially. We assume that he will get bought out. the teams out there for him, it sounds like the Lakers, the Clippers, the Timberwolves are the key, the main teams that are likely for Bradley Beal. Do you have a favorite fit for Bradley Beal?
Man, I love Milwaukee for him. Like, you talk about the opportunity in that backcourt. Like, that's, for me, the A leader in the clubhouse, 1A, is Milwaukee. You look at Giannis and the fact that he is still not asked for a trade out of Milwaukee. You look at Miles Turner. They have pieces there, but no backcourt, no reliable backcourt. And so if you're Brad Beal looking to rejuvenate your stock around the league, it's not going to be a place where I think he's going to have to come off the bench and assert himself again like he did in Phoenix. Like, in Milwaukee, he has a clear road to getting 20 points a game. And that, to me, for Milwaukee, and they don't have the kind of money that some other teams might have in terms of the full mid-level exception or the taxpayer mid-level exception. I think Bradley Beal has to look at this situation and say, what gives me the best opportunity to prove that I still have it, that I am still worth a multi-year contract going forward for not just the minimum, but for tens of millions of dollars. And I think he can still be that player. But when you look around the league, there's not many spots that have like a clear void in the backcourt, quite like Milwaukee in terms of Giannis and Miles Turner. I just feel like the Milwaukee Bucks give him the best opportunity. He's going to get his money either way. So that's why I feel like Milwaukee might be actually in the driver's seat here, because he's going to have a great opportunity in the Eastern Conference to rehabilitate that stock around the league.
You know, it's interesting with the Bucks because they've also been connected to Chris Paul. I would hate the Chris Paul fit with the Bucks because I think what they're building right now, it feels like on paper to me, is a faster pace, you know, up and down team, and Chris Paul just slows you down. Bradley Beal is the opposite of that to me. He's an ideal fit with this new type of situation they're trying to build, because Beal can play fast, he can play without the ball, he can run through handoffs and screens. He still is like a 40% guy from three. I mean, like, he missed a lot of games with the Suns, and he was underwhelming in a lot of ways, but he can still shoot the hell out of it. He can still hit pull-up mid-range jumpers. He can still be a secondary facilitator, and putting that guy behind Giannis Antetokounmpo to me is the best of both worlds, because he gets opportunity to be a guy on ball and be a guy off ball, and he's going to get a ton of minutes on that team. There's no overlap in a backcourt. With the Clippers, I think they'd be second on my list, you know, but you know, I think the Clippers, like, it's going to be very Harden-driven and Kawhi. Whereas with the Bucks, I think it's going to be Giannis and then you for like the primary creator. And so you get a little bit of both with the Bucks. Now, with Beal, as long as I've, you know, known about Bradley Beal, you know, when it came to like situations where he would go after the Wizards and all that, it never seemed like he'd ever want to go to a cold weather place. Yeah, and that's where, like, I wonder. I know the Steinline report in Minnesota was a team on that list as well. I'm not so sure he'd end up choosing the Bucks. I would guess he'd choose Lakers or Clippers, one of the two California teams interested in him. But I'm with you, Tom. I'm hoping Bradley Beal chooses the Bucks. And also, I just think it would be cool to see that team get bolstered around Giannis. When we went from going like, is Giannis going to be in a trade, to getting Miles Turner and then maybe getting Bradley Beal, I think suddenly the Bucks could end up, you know, in that contender status. It wouldn't shock me at all.
He needs to get rid of the NTC label, the no trade clause label. And the Milwaukee Bucks give him the opportunity to completely rebrand. Like, this idea that he's just going to go to the Lakers or the Clippers and get rid of the notion that he is just like this over...
Nothing changes. No rebranding there.
No, you have to rebrand. And I think that's what you have to look at it for Bradley Beal, is that this upcoming year is all about rebranding your use in the NBA. And there's just not a lot of oxygen there in LA, either with the Clippers or the Lakers. But man, you got all the opportunity, and the lane is cleared out for you in Milwaukee. And of course, you know, Milwaukee, wouldn't that be interesting if Milwaukee was like, yo, we're gonna have dead cap of $22 million on Damian Lillard. But if we can get Bradley Beal on a vet minimum deal or something close to that, you're getting Bradley Beal at about $30 million, essentially, right? And that makes a lot more palatable to get off the Damian Lillard money if you're able to bring in Brad Beal. Now, if they don't get Brad Beal, it's that's just horrible bookkeeping right there. But you can see why if John Horst and Giannis Antetokounmpo have visions of bringing in a vet guy like Bradley Beal, even though they're going to have $22 million on the cap, that's not bad. And that's a nice pivot for them if they can land it and prove to Brad Beal, like, if you want a long-term contract at the end of this season, we give you the best opportunity to do that.
Yeah, I just think suddenly they'd feel fun. They'd Kevin Porter, Kuzma, Trent, Rollins, they get him back. They get Bobby Portis, Turner now. Just a lot of guys that can play in different spaces on the floor. All right, Chris Paul. Chris Paul, I mentioned that I don't like the fit for him in Milwaukee. I would sour on the Bucks, to be honest with you, if he ended up going there. Honestly, I think retirement would be the best thing for Chris Paul at this point of his career. I said that before. He said in an interview recently he's got likely just 1 year left. Now, I think where Beal goes will impact what happens with Paul and Brogdon and Westbrook and maybe even Damian Lillard for that matter. But with Chris Paul, do you have a favorite fit for him, Tom?
Hey, who's the backup point guard in LA right now, the Clippers? Who's the backup point guard? Do they have one?
I think it's just 48 minutes of James Harden, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Bring him home.
You want Chris Paul backing up James Harden?
Bring him home.
I don't know.
Bring one last shot at winning a title. I'm not saying he's going to be
Harden
favorites.
Harden again at 40 years old at this point.
I think bringing him back to Clippers and having his kind of farewell tour with the Clippers and all those good vibes, I feel like this is where we're headed. Whether it's Bradley Beal or Chris Paul, I think Bradley Beal, if he ends up in the Clippers, I don't think Chris Paul goes there. But in terms of opportunity, he said a lot over the years how much he's missed being around his family, and the last couple of years has been really tough. And the same way for Damian Lillard is he's been on the road a lot. But if he goes back home to LA, I don't think it's going to be with the Lakers because I think it's Luka's team right now. But I could see a situation where Chris Paul goes back to the Clippers one last time as his farewell tour.
Talk about bad fits, Luka and Chris Paul. How soon until they're ripping each other's heads off?
Yeah, and that's the thing with LeBron. Like you would see LeBron and him, banana boat, just in LA. Finally, we get to play together. But no, this is Bill Duffy and Luka Doncic's team going forward. And I do not think that Chris Paul, as much of a hands-on manager that you have in NBA history next to Luka Doncic, I don't think that's a good fit. But in LA, where I think he would understand his place on the hierarchy in LA with James Harden and Kawhi Leonard, I could see that being a solid fit. And it's same way with the Golden State Warriors a couple years ago, where it was clear he is not the alpha on the team. And so I think the Clippers makes the most sense, but a lot of this is the same thing. What allows him to be closer to his family in LA? And if he wants to play one more year, you could see that is like a little fairy tale ending for him.
That's fair. That's fair. That's the best fit. It makes sense. The fairy tale aspect would be nice. Yeah, Chris Paul at this point. Minnesota, I thought about as well as the best fit for him, but then you're taking away opportunities from Rob Dillingham entering year two potentially as a backup point. You're also taking touches away from a guy like Terrence Shannon for that matter. Shannon is going to fill minutes by Nickeil Alexander-Walker, but he can handle the ball a bit too. I don't want to add Chris Paul to that mix there in Minnesota. So the Clippers make the most sense. Westbrook's a free agent as well. Still, we'll see. Again, some of these guys, Malcolm Brogdon, Russell Westbrook, where they choose is going to be dependent on, I think, where the top choices go. Those top choices being still Chris Paul and Bradley Beal once Beal is officially bought out. Damian Lillard as well. Dame has been connected to a whole bunch of teams, Boston included. And Boston stands out to me because that's the least obvious one, going to the Celtics, where Tatum's also out for the year with a torn Achilles. Peyton Pritchard going to be their starter in all likelihood. They have young players that they want to invest in. How are you thinking about this if you're Dame? What's your approach with your next destination? Are you looking for the team that gives you the best choice to win a title? The team that gives you the best choice to go back to being Damian Lillard? How do you think he should be approaching his choice here, Tom?
Yeah, wouldn't it be kind of crazy if Jason Tatum and Damian Lillard just rehab together? Like, that is a story that you would, a very unfortunate story in league history that we've never really quite seen before, is two guys suffering catastrophic career altering injuries that get to rehab together on a timeline that the Boston Celtics, I feel like, would be open to them. Just take it easy. Like, do it on your own terms and don't have to accelerate to try to win a championship this year, because this is going to be a gap year for the Celtics. Or I could see Damian Lillard just taking a few months off and then signing with a team once it becomes clear, like mid-season, clear where he wants to be, where his family is happiest. Take care of that, all that stuff on his rehab, and then pick a team based on where, like, the playoff contention is in like, say, at the February trade deadline, to kind of see where the NBA landscape shakes out. To me, Damian Lillard took a lot of heat for, you know, when he was in the Milwaukee trade situation and figuring out, like, how can he get to Miami? Like, Miami. But now with this Achilles tear, I do think that he is probably going to just reset and figure out, what do I want out of the rest of my career? And then go forward with a plan of attack in the next few months.
I mean, the truth is, the Heat, earlier I said how, you know, well, what are they going to do? What's their direction? Who's their primary playmaker here? They got Hero, they got Jakachonis, now they have Norm Powell. The truth is, Damian Lillard, post-torn Achilles, rehabbing, you know, with Miami, going back there, and then less of a stress on you to be the creator. That fits interesting for him. The Lakers, semi-interesting, because Luka can carry everything there. You can be the secondary guy behind him on a team that could potentially compete for championships, depending on what else they do. He's been connected to the Warriors. I'd hate the fit, playing behind Stephen Curry. And for him, it's like the way Steve Kerr uses Steph in actions. After you suffer such a catastrophic injury, let's get that load off of you. Like, let's relax a little bit more after that. So I lean towards, I think, Miami or the Lakers as the teams that are most interesting to me. The Celtics, I'm intrigued, but I don't see it as much as Miami or as I do with the Lakers. Now, the Celtics have another free agent, Tom, Al Horford, who's still making up his mind on what to do, whether it's retire, whether it's, you know, take a break and come back mid-year, or go to the Warriors. He's also been connected to the Lakers. I wonder about the Nuggets as well. I have not heard directly anything at all that he could be connected to them. But with the Valanciunas situation, with him potentially wanting to go play overseas in Greece, I'm intrigued. Mm-hmm. If Horford could potentially wait for that opening to come, play behind Jokic and manage his minutes all year. There's still some good free agents left, man. Like, Al Horford was a great defender still last year for the Celtics. And so, like, if I'm Golden State, I'm, like, going all in. Like, sending Steph to his door, knocking on the door. We need you. We need you. Let's go win another one. Because, like, Horford might be old. He might be soon to be a father of six. But, like, that dude can still ball, man. He's still a great defensive player, and he can still shoot threes, still can pass the ball.
Doesn't he feel like a warrior already? Like, in terms of Steve Kerr, like, his system and every, like, you need a great passing big who can defend, has the championship IQ. He already feels like a Warriors player to me, and has been for a long time, but has never played for them. And they've had such a need as a stretch five playmaker, a guy can move the ball. They've never had that guy. And Al Horford is that guy. And yes, he's at this latter stage of his career, the twilight of his career, but that's the same timeline as Jimmy Butler, Draymond Green, and Steph Curry. It's a perfect lock and key fit. The thing that is, I think, interesting is the Jokic thing. But remember, the Al Horford backing up Joel Embiid situation a couple years ago was an outright disaster. And I would suspect that Al Horford, yes, he's intrigued by the idea at this stage of his career, not having to play 30 minutes a night. But I do wonder if he looks at the Golden State situation with the opportunity with Steve Kerr and Steph Curry and Draymond Green, Jimmy Butler, as another championship opportunity for him. And I don't think that he's going to be glued to the bench like he would be with Jokic.
I mean, look, Horford, he's got a Hall of Fame case. Two-time national champion in college, one-time NBA champion.
I think he is
already, too. But if you win another one as well, you're cemented basketball Hall of Famer. I think he already is, personally. Should be, considering college success and NBA success and longevity and the highs he had. He's been an all-NBA guy. He's a five-time all-star. Like, to me, Al Horford is deserving, especially considering, you know, the some of the guys that are in there. So Horford should be a Hall of Famer, but you get one more. I mean, to me, it's really a question of, does he want to uproot his family and move across the country from Boston to the Bay and start a new life again? And that, to me, is the big question here facing Horford. And that's why we've yet to see a clear-cut decision yet, because I think with a lot of these guys, there's still a lot of dominoes that have to fall. There's just a lot that still needs to play out as some of these choices are made for them. Tom, there was a new actually, before we get to the Heave rule, I was going to mention that. All the restricted free agents that are still out there right now as well. Quentin Grimes, Jonathan Kuminga, Josh Giddey, Cam Thomas. How much of this do you think is these guys kind of overplaying their hands, too high of expectations? How much of this is just bad luck with bad timing? Bad luck?
Yeah. Bad luck. I mean, the only team that had cap space in Brooklyn, and it just seems like there's just no market for their services. And I think with the new apron rules, the new CBA, teams are probably a little bit gun shy or just trying to figure out the sign-in trades and all of the different machinations in the new cap, that it's just, it's a perfect storm of terrible market value for these restricted free agents this year. And I feel bad for them. This is not a good situation for any party involved, because now you got Kuminga, who potentially could be having this qualifier option, picking up the qualifier with the Golden State Warriors and becoming an unrestricted free agent, having that kind of hanging over the Warriors. The same goes for Josh Giddey and with Cam Thomas. It's not a good situation for either side of the table, which is why I think they ultimately will get something done here soon and not let this drag on too far. But with Kuminga, I saw that the Sacramento Kings were kind of, Anthony Slater reporting that the Sacramento Kings were kind of the strongest suitor for Kuminga, but they offered kind of a really unappetizing trade in Devin Carter, Dario Saric, and a couple second round picks. I think that's the opener. I think the Sacramento Kings are probably going to say, all right, we'll start with Devin Carter. We'll throw in Keon Ellis, and we'll throw you a first round pick that's Spurs 27, maybe could potentially get it done. I don't think that's the last offer that they're going to give the Warriors. And I feel like, when you see Gary Payton II and what he, GP2, what he brings to the Warriors, you see a lot of the same with Devin Carter as kind of like this young athlete who can play bigger. He's second gen player, and Keon Ellis is he's kind of the next Alex Caruso. I could see the Warriors just waiting for the Kings to put in those assets into a deal. And I suspect that with, you know, Scott Perry and the Sacramento Kings, they're trying to get more athleticism in the lineup. They already got Malik Monk and Dennis Schroeder. I don't see the fit with Keon Ellis and Devin Carter anymore, and the Warriors might be the big beneficiary there.
I don't see the fit with the entire Kings roster. The whole team is a mess. Like, what are they trying to build? A your turn, my turn, half-court offense after all the motion and movement and speed and the fun of the light the beam Kings? Like, those were completely different teams built with Sabonis and Fox and all of those guys. And then now you have DeRozan and Levine, and you had like Dennis Schroeder and Jonathan Kuminga. I mean, what the hell are they doing? They're one of the big losers of the offseason already, and they could be even bigger losers depending on what they end up doing here with Jonathan Kuminga. I hate everything they've done besides drafting Nick Clifford. I really like Nick Clifford. I really like Devin Carter as well, but I just don't like what's being built around them with the veterans. It just feels dysfunctional to me with what's going on in Sacramento right now, Tom. And I agree with you. I mean, I think it's just bad timing for a lot of these guys. I think of those four, it's possible none of them are really all that great anyway as well. Like, Quentin Grimes has been very up and down. I like him a lot, but with him, he's been up and down. He's had some highs, he's had some lows. He's hard to trust if you're making a big offer sheet to him. Cam Thomas, one of the worst defenders in all of basketball. He does nothing but score. And I like watching Cam Thomas. I'm a Cam Thomas fan, but he has his flaws. Kuminga, his flaws have been well covered. And then with Josh Giddey, I mean, he got played off the floor in the postseason a year ago for the Thunder, gets traded to the Bulls, and he had a pretty good year. But he isn't without concern with that he can be in a playoff setting because of the shooting limitations. So all four of those guys, they aren't some perfect restricted free agents. They They all have big concerns and all still have a lot to prove in their careers, which is why I wonder if any of them could, you know, sign the qualifying offer and become unrestricted in a year, or just sign a short-term deal and become an unrestricted free agent in 2027. To me, that's something on my mind there. And
do you think the Bulls would trade Kobe White for Kuminga?
That'd be foolish.
I know. No. But couldn't you see it, though? They bring back Josh Giddey and they say, Kobe White, we want some athleticism here with Modest Muzelis and Jonathan Kuminga. Let's go. The Warriors are just sitting there waiting for Kobe White to come down. Because the base level compensation rules mean that they can't take back, the Warriors can't take back more than 50% of Kuminga's next salary. So if he gets signed for $30 million, $25 million, and then you trade it to Chicago, that $12 million contract of Kobe White kind of looks a lot more appealing. So
I mean, I wouldn't rule it out. It's the Bulls. The Bulls are ass.
One for one. Kobe White, Jonathan Kuminga, sign and trade. They love one-on-one deals. Wouldn't that be insane?
They do. Don't they have two of the four in the last however many years he posted recently, right?
That's right. That's right. And Anfernee Simons in the trade for Jrue Holiday becomes another one-for-one deal with the second-round pick being pulled off the table. That is another one. But, man, Arturis Karnišovas, with that deal, if it's Kobe White for Jonathan Kuminga, Bulls fans, whew, I feel for you, man.
The NBA installed a new rule. Well, at least for Summer League, it's likely to translate to the regular season as well. But they are having an end-of-quarter heave rule that begins in 2025 Summer League, where if a heave occurs in the final 3 seconds of the first three quarters, and it comes from at least 36 feet away, it doesn't count as a miss for your own stats. It only counts as a team miss. Now, I hope this encourages more heaves. However, I agree with the Peyton Pritchard quote, where earlier this year he said, this is posted by Jay King on social. He said, Peyton Pritchard on players who wouldn't launch a heave because they were protecting their shooting percentages. And Peyton Pritchard said, soft mentally. Worrying about a shooting percentage, it's very weak. You care about your individual shooting percentage more than winning. That's so soft. And the NBA is enabling softness.
No, they're not enabling it. No, they're not enabling it. They're accepting the fact that these players are so hyper-tuned and sensitive to their free field goal percentages because their contracts do depend on it. A lot of these contracts have bonuses or increases in salary where if they hit certain percentages or hit a number of threes, these sort of things do matter. These things do matter. And it's not guys like soft mentally in the sense of like, I mean, Kevin Durant has advocated for the field goal savings club where he's like, look, if I'm 7 of 18 in a game, I'm not going to take that heave. You know, like if I'm trying to have a good scoring line or a shooting line, I'm not going to take that heave and mess it up even more.
Let's not use KD in the example here. left a team that was up 3-1 in the Western Conference Finals for the team that beat him.
Russell Westbrook also is notoriously not a heaver.
Wow, let's also not use Russell Westbrook here.
You're picking up on my point. Can't
even handle the Westbrook nickname, which is one of the most brilliant nicknames in the history of sports and most accurate.
You're not changing their minds and saying like, forget about the field goal percentage, just take the heave. So the NBA is just responding to player behavior and saying, we are going to incentivize more threes. Like, I think this is more about seeing more Luka Doncic's and Steph Curry and Chris Paul's. Those three players love taking heaves, love firing up the heave. And I do think that like, it's better for fans. It's way better. And I get the understanding that you're enabling soft mentality, but look, this is where we are in society. And so rather than like continuing this path of not seeing fun basketball, just accept it and make the rule change, which they did.
Well, now Peyton Pritchard will no longer get heaves because Tatum and Brown and the stars are willing to do them now, right? I guess you take away that fun.
Hold that thought and we'll be right back.
Tom, let's talk about Summer League. Let's talk about some Summer League here, Tom, because we got games coming up, being played right now in Utah and then in the California Classic. And then we have Vegas Summer League, the big main event later this week. All 30 teams head out to Las Vegas and play their rookies for the first time. There's also a lot of second-year guys playing. So before we talk about some of the 2025 rookies, Tom, I do want to talk about some of the 2024 guys.
Yeah.
Who are the guys that have the most to prove entering their second seasons in the NBA? Who are you watching for in the Summer League from the 2024 draft class? Who's number one on your list?
Okay, so we've already talked about Devin Carter. I love Devin Carter. I feel like he's a guy that coming off of his shoulder injury and missing half the season, not really getting the minutes that he deserves in the sense of like getting the kind of oxygen that he needs to kind of prove himself. I think Devin Carter is so much better than what he showed us last year. Still really big on him. But the guy that I'm going here, of course, it's the summer of Reed Shepherd. We're going to finally see more Reed Shepherd, him playing basketball. We need more of this in our lives. And I want to see more Reed Shepherd out here because he's way too good for the G League, right? And the Houston Rockets are going to be contending for an NBA championship this season. And I do think that there's another possible trade in the works down the road at the deadline. If Giannis looks at his situation, they don't get Bradley Beal. Could Giannis be a potential option for the Houston Rockets because they still have a lot of gunpowder left to go after another star with the Phoenix picks, with Reed Shepherd and Jabari Smith. Of course, you know, now that he's extended, it complicates things a little bit, but you're looking at Reed Shepherd being potentially part of another deal after this summer league. So I love Reed Shepherd. He averaged 30 points a game in three G League games last year. This guy's way better than what he's shown last year. And I'm still a believer. So I can't wait to see what he does this summer.
Did you see the Rafael Stone quote where he said, "We need him to be good, period"? And I think that's true. I mean, they need Reed to be good as a backup ball handler behind Fred VanVleet, as an eventual Fred VanVleet replacement at some point in the future as well. I mean, Shepherd could be a weapon immediately for this team, a very valuable piece for them. There's a chance if Reed Shepherd pans out, he's the better option to be that guard on the floor in closing lineups because of his shooting prowess, because of his defensive activity, getting him passing lanes, swiping at the ball when he's defending on the perimeter. Reed Shepherd in year two could be one of those X factors for the Rockets that makes them contender to, oh, wait a minute, they're right there with OKC. Because think about that's what OKC received was improvement from their youth. Young guys got better. SGA got even better as an MVP candidate already. He became an MVP. Jalen Williams got better. All of their young guys got better. And so for the Rockets, they can't just be a team that added vets. They need a Reed Shepherd to improve. They need a Jabari Smith to continue making progress. They need like these Tari Eason types, Amen Thompson, to continue making progress. And Shepherd is undoubtedly a big part of that. So he'd be number one on my list as well, Tom. But another guy that I'm looking forward to watching as well this year in the G League and in the Summer League, Tijon Salon, the Charlotte Hornets, because Salon did nothing last year, really. He was one of the most raw players in all of the NBA. He played in 60 games, did not produce well at all, 28% from three, 33% from the floor. That was in the NBA over 60 games. In the G League, he played five games. Did not dominate in the G League like our guy Reed Shepherd did, like a lot of lottery picks do. In the G League, very similar numbers, 11.8 points per game, 7.6 rebounds, 37% from the floor, 24% from three. So does Salon show some big-time progress in year two, or does he continue looking like a guy that everybody said entering his draft last year, one of the most raw prospects in years, nowhere near ready, 2 years away from being 2 years away, that type of thing with Salon? What is he going to look like for the Hornets this year on a roster that's really good? There's a lot of talent on this Hornets Summer League roster, including some of their draft picks this year. So I wonder how he looks in this ecosystem for Charlotte this year.
I love that. And I'll go on the other side of this, the other side of the spectrum here, on a guy that is not a raw project. He was someone that could be stepping in right away, is Dalton Knecht. He's older than Anthony Edwards, LaMelo Ball, and Franz Wagner. If he doesn't dominate Summer League, he might be finding himself out of the league soon, because the Lakers tried to trade him at the deadline, kind of fell out of the rotation, wasn't a guy that was relied upon at all, buried on the bench in the postseason. And the thing is, he's not young. He's not a raw prospect. He's 24 years old. 24-year-olds at Summer League should be dominating. And if Dalton Connect doesn't become a go-to scorer and a three-level scorer out on the Lakers Summer League, then there's going to be a lot of questions about his future in the league already, because he just did not have a good season. He had a lot of hype coming into last year, and he's on a timetable at his age that you'd expect a lot more productivity. And the fact that he is already 24 years old, dude, like this Dalton Connect thing, he has the most to prove to me in terms of, like, can he help you win games this year for the Los Angeles Lakers or whomever he ends up on? Because that was a really tough year for him last year with the Lakers.
I think in a different type of way, I'm looking at Rob Dillingham with Minnesota, because they're connected to Beal, they're connected to Chris Paul. If you're Dillingham and you come out this weekend in Vegas and you have just this massive performance, and you show, I am, like, way, way better than these guys, I should not be playing in the Summer League, you might win those minutes. Mm-hmm. You might be the guy playing in that backcourt next to or behind Mike Conley and playing alongside Anthony Edwards in a lot of endgame situations. So I think Dillingham, it's a massive opportunity for him. And same thing with his teammate Terrence Shannon, too, this year with Nickeil Alexander-Walker leaving for Atlanta. Shannon's going to be the guy who I think could – really surprise a lot of people, like he did in the postseason with some really good scoring performances, downhill attacker. He's a spark plug scorer. He's long. He's strong. He's burly. He can pull up. He can get to the rim. Shannon and then Dillingham with his creation ability. For Minnesota, they're going to be the team, one of the teams I'm really watching very, very closely this weekend. And the guy that I probably would have had at the top of my list has already played, so we're not considering him here. But I do want to mention Nikola Topic.
Let's go.
With the Oklahoma City Thunder. It's amazing when you realize Nikola Topic, entering his second year after missing all of last year with a torn ACL, is younger than Con Knipple, VJ Edgecombe, yep, Colin Murray-Boyles, Yang Hansen. He's younger than Derek Queen. He's younger than Danny Wolfe. He's younger than Cedric Coward, younger than Walter Clayton, and now we're getting to the older guys, the upperclassmen in college. But he is younger than a lot of first-round draft picks. And he had a full year to improve his shooting, working with renowned shooting shot doctor Chip England while recovering from his torn ACL. And boy, some of the moments that he's had so far, deflections on defense, drives to the rim, pull-up threes. Had some turnovers. I believe he finished with 5 in his second game earlier this week. But, man, Topic just looks like another guy for the Thunder, man. Another fit for OKC.
It's not fair. It's not fair. Like, it is kind of the reward for really smart management from Sam Presti, is that you can take Topic and then just be like, yeah, we're going to give him a year off. And then next year, he's going to be 19 years old and balling. And we don't have to really nail our draft pick. We can keep doing this where we bring these guys off on slowly. And then 2 years down the line, you're like, wait, how did they get this guy? Like, where did he come from? They were willing to be patient. And that patience is something that is in short supply around the league. And I think it's a virtue that GMs with owners that are trying desperately with impulsive moves and they switch coaches, OKC is totally different. They're on the sustainability, patience, long-term view, and Topic is the fruit of that labor. And I can't believe that they potentially have another rotation guy just falling out of the sky in Nikola Topic next year. I think it's a huge development.
That's a good one. He's going to be a good one, man. I think that dude is going to play next year. I would not choose him for Rookie of the Year considering the guys ahead of him. But I think on a per-minute basis, the dude's going to be awesome. From the 2025 rookies, Tom, who are you most excited to watch this weekend?
All right, number one for me is Derek Queen. I want to see what he can do. There's a lot of pressure on this guy because of that 26 pick that the Indiana Pacers got back in the trade is potentially going to be, you know, the New Orleans Pelicans are looking at this. We're like, we got two basically top five talents in terms of Jeremiah Fears and Derek Queen. I want to see what Derek Queen does with New Orleans, because Joe Dumars and Troy Weaver are betting the farm on this guy. And I do think that he's got a lot of pressure. Really good game. Kind of got that Jokic type where he's not a super athlete, but he's got great touch around the basket. Let's see how he defends at the next level. And we'll see in the summer league what he can do with this roster in the summer league, where he is going to be surrounded with some talent. And with this New Orleans in transition, this could be a big year for him.
Queen's a good one. I mean, I think like Cooper is the number one, you know, and, but he's like such an obvious choice. I look forward to being there for Cooper on Thursday with his debut against Bronny James and the Lakers. What a good job by the NBA scheduling that out. Cooper Flagg against Bronny James. Easy for them to promote that one. So Cooper, of course, VJ's already made his debut. Dylan Harper has not. I very much look forward to seeing Dylan Harper with the Spurs. We've seen Ace Bailey. I look forward to seeing Con Knipl. I think of some of the top 10 guys, Colin Murray Boyles. I'm very much looking forward to see Colin Murray Boyles with the Raptors, because this dude, he wreaks havoc on defense. How does he bring this energy to a summer league environment? Offensively, what does his jumper look like? He did not shoot well at all in Chicago at the draft combine. Has he shown some level of progress playing in summer league ever since we saw him in May shooting? And then Kaman Malawach with the Phoenix Suns. He fell to number 10. There was talk of him as high as 3, 4, 5. Slips to 10. The Suns get him there. They badly need a center. They drafted they traded for Mark Williams. They draft Malawach. Does he look ready? Does he show off some new skills? I've heard in workouts that he was shooting the hell out of it. So let's see some of these guys like that have these improvable skills. So I think it's the middle of the lottery. Boyles at 9, Malawach at 10, Howard at 11. It seems like he's not going to play. He's doubtful to play in summer league for the Grizzlies, Tom. But man, I wish Howard would play. I really do. That would have been cool.
Yeah, it would have been great to see him. You know, I think I'm just so excited to see not just Coward or Queen, but it's such a cool thing to see these guys come in with a lot of expectations and showing what they can do. And Ace Bailey and VJ Edgecombe, as well as they showed out, I'm still locked in on what they're going to be able to do. And Hanson, Yang Hanson, the Portland Trailblazers, the big Chinese big man, where it's just like, how talented is he coming over to America and playing against, you know, NBA level talent? I'm really, really interested to see, you know, a lot of these guys as we get younger in the draft, as we have fewer games at the college level to see some of these players play. I think summer league is becoming even more important in terms of just showing what you can do. And I think that Cooper Flagg obviously is going to be everyone's biggest ticket going into this, but there's a lot of prospects that I'm excited to see.
Yeah. I think it's going to be a fun year at summer league. Tom, thanks for joining me today, man.
You got it, Keb.
Thanks to Tom Haverstraw for joining me today. Thanks to you for giving us a listen. Thanks to Emmy, Madison, and the whole team for producing today's episode. We'll be back again with a bunch of Summer League podcasts. I got a bunch of fun guests coming later in the week. So those podcasts, you'll hear some over this weekend. You'll hear some next week and in the weeks to come. Got a lot of stuff planned out. Thanks for listening. Have a good day.